Today on Maine Calling, a new appreciation of author Gabriel Garcia Marquez and 100 Years of Solitude. Gabriel Garcia Marquez is considered one of the greatest writers of the 20th century. He won the Nobel Prize for Literature in 1982. His masterpiece, the novel 100 Years of Solitude, popularized a style of writing known as magical realism. That novel has been turned into a TV series that's winning over new audiences. I'm Cindy Hahn. Join me for a conversation with the author's niece, who lives here in Maine, and with a Bowdoin professor who's a scholar of Garcia Marquez's work. We'll discuss his life and his contributions to literature and to understanding Colombian culture. And we'll discuss 100 Years of Solitude, both the book and the show, and hear about the Bowdoin professor's new podcast about Garcia Marquez and his famous novel. Maine Calling is coming right up.
Maine Calling is made possible in part by Maine Farmland Trust, working with farmers to grow the future of farming and food in Maine. Learn more at mainefarmlandtrust.org/learn, and by Maine Health, where care teams provide expert, coordinated care focused on your overall wellness to help you be your healthiest self. MaineHealth.org.
This is Maine Calling, Cindy Hahn. The new TV series, 100 Years of Solitude, has reawakened interest in writer Gabriel Garcia Marquez. We're fortunate in Maine to have both a scholar who specializes in studying Garcia Marquez's work, as well as the author's niece. Joining me today to talk about the acclaimed novelist's life and work are Bowdoin College professor Nadia Celis. She teaches Romance Languages and Literature and Latin American, Caribbean, and Latinx Studies. And Maria Mockler, she is the niece of Garcia Marquez, and she lives in Lisbon Falls. She works as a bilingual coordinator for Included Health. We invite you to join the conversation. Have you read 100 Years of Solitude or any of Garcia Marquez's work? Have you watched the new Netflix series? Send an email to talk@mainepublic.org. You can post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Nadia, Gabriel Garcia Marquez often is called one of the greatest novelists of all time. He won the Nobel Prize for Literature, and he's just acclaimed all around. So what is it about his writing that earned him that honor and those accolades?
I don't think that I can answer that question quite straightforward, you know. He is definitely the case that the numbers of readers around the world attest to that fascination that his writer produces. But precisely in the quest for that answer, I've been spending the last, 15 or 20 years doing research on what is that is so magic about the way that he portrayed Caribbean, Latin American, Colombian culture, that it continues to call on readers from so many different places. He is certainly the second most read author in Spanish after Cervantes's El Quijote. Cervantes with El Quijote, 100 Years of Solitude in particular, has reached almost every language, almost every important language or larger or more spoken language, but even some of the, less, like the smaller communities languages have translated this novel. And in my experience doing research about him, one of the most striking experiences was when I was at the personal archive in UT Austin, reading the fans' letters. And so many people from different places in the world claiming that the stories that are being told by Garcia Marquez are so personal, so connected to their own experiences, that they could even think of their own family histories through the lenses of these novels. And that's what I also have experienced teaching the 100 Years of Solitude in particular at Bowdoin College, where I have for a while taught several iterations of this course on 100 Years of Solitude, and have asked my students once again to do those reflections on what is about this work. So it is sort of like an undescribable magic And at the same time, I think it's very centered in the universality of that small village that Macondo is, and about the fact that he engaged with the most intimate of human quests, as big classics have that ability to just like make us feel that everything that happened to those characters, even in the more remote places in their world, is so personal and human.
And I have to be conscious that not everyone has read 100 Years of Solitude. So when you say Macondo, it's the village at the heart of the novel. But I know a lot of people have read it and know exactly what you're talking about. And you personally have a connection to him in terms of where you are from, too, from the Colombian Caribbean area.
Yes. I grew up in the Colombian Caribbean. I've been in Maine now for 18 years, in the United States for 23. But I actually grew up in the Colombian Caribbean. So I can be one of those people who claims to have so much of that culture to be, who can claim that so much of that, of the culture that he portrays is very relevant to her own experience, as many people in the Caribbean. So that's one of my main connections with Garcia Marquez. I grew up in the culture and I became a specialist in literary studies, but it wasn't until I was in the United States that I realized that he had such a powerful voice and that he was speaking to people from so many different places. I almost had taken him for granted until I started to see the interest, and then eventually I became a scholar on his work.
Wonderful. And Maria, it's kind of amazing that Gabriel Garcia Marquez is your uncle, and here you are in Maine. Tell us about your connection to him.
My connection to him, he was one of my 10 uncles. Then, of course, growing up in this family, he was just one more, one more of those. Of course, I couldn't, like, when I was a kid, I couldn't understand, like, the magnitude of what Garcia Marquez meant. For everybody. So, I don't know.
It's your father's brother. Is
It
that the
my dad,
link?
yes. So he was the oldest, yes. And then my dad was the second, yes. So he
And
was just.
what can you share about what he was like, and
Oh
as
my
a
God.
kid?
I thought we had only 1 hour, so. But I can share. Well, I mean, what can I say about my uncle? It was the one who liked to spoiled everybody, the one who made everything possible, obviously, because he had the, I want to say, like, the means to do that. And I have very, very sweet memories of him, throughout my, early years. So when I One of the first memories that was, like, really impactful was when I was, I believe I was like 6 or 7 years old, and I wanted so bad to have, and this may be like something very simple, but for me it was a big deal. I always wanted to have a box of 12 Prismacolor color pencils, specifically that brand. Apparently that was kind of like expensive at the time. So I always, my dad used to buy us like a different, like the cheap brand. And one day I was talking to him and he said, "Oh, what would you like for your birthday?" And I said, "Well, I've always wanted a box of Prismacolor pencil, like the 12 pencil color pencils." And he said, "Okay, I think I can do that." So he called his wife and talked to her about it. So the next day, they delivered one box of 36 colors, not only for me, but also for my sister, along with the big, nice backpack. And I'll never remember, the backpack, it had like printed in it, like books and colors, and it said school stuff. And At the time, I didn't know what that meant because I didn't know English at that time. But it was a box of 36 colors, pencils, inside the backpack, one for me, one for my sister. So that was, and let me tell you, I took care of that, of those pencils. So I think I had them for like several years. Like many, many years. And I remember memorizing the name of each color. I don't know if you're familiar with the Prismacolor.
Oh, man.
Somebody says like lemon yellow. Yeah.
It's like the crayons too, the names. Right. Yeah. So he was a big-hearted.
Yes, he was. He was. And another funny thing about him, my uncle Jaime used to call him our social security, because he would be like, if anyone was in need of a medical procedures, surgeries and things like that, he would be the first one saying, hey, do whatever you need to do. Mm-hmm. I'll take care of it. So my uncle Hami used to say, yep, Gabo is our social security. And he was. And personally, that was, and it was true, because he did that for my mom at different times, in her life. She required like very, expensive procedures, and he always took care of that. So,
wow, lucky you.
He was a person, yes.
You said Gabo. So explain, I know people in Colombia refer to him that way. It's just a nickname, right?
Yes, it is. Yeah.
But that's how people know him.
Yes.
Well, yeah, great.
But in the family, his siblings used to call him Gavito, no Gabo, Gavito. Yeah.
Okay, we got the inside scoop.
But the regular Colombian will call him Gabo.
Gabo.
Everybody.
A lot about this role of García Márquez, that is not only a writer, it's like a public figure.
Sure.
Is, I think we were talking recently about with some guests in my podcast about the status of a national hero. The fact that he is like in the bills, like in the 50,000 pesos, which sounds like a lot, but it's actually like $12.
But it's like, still significant.
But it's still one of the largest bills, yeah. in our currency, in the Colombian pesos. And his face is there. And the fact that he is, there are always like mentions of what he would have said at certain things, or like when we face, especially questions related to peacemaking. He's also a big icon for journalism, not only in Colombia, but in Latin America. And one of the foundations that he created before he died in 2000, in the early 2000s, he created this Fundación for the Nuevo Periodismo, for New Journalism, and it continues to be one of the main elements of his legacy. 1987, that is the day that it was created. So he's not only a writer to us, it's just like, that's one of the big elements of my interest in this, in his figure, in his personality, and in his impact, not only for world readers, for writers in other countries. He has been a very influential force behind the renovation of post-colonial, what we call post-colonial writing. He's been recognized by even figures like Toni Morrison or Salman Rushdie as a living force behind their very discovering of a way to express their own experiences and the experiences of their communities as part of post-colonial territories, colonial and post-colonial territories. So he's way beyond a writer, and in this case, beyond the uncle.
Yeah. I mean, I'm glad you also mentioned he was a journalist. I mean, that was a big part of his career as well that maybe people don't actually realize. Nadia, part of the reason we're talking today about him is that his best-known novel, 100 Years of Solitude, as you mentioned, is now this major new television series on Netflix. And that book, it has been called his masterpiece, and students have read it. Everyone who studied it know it. But for those who haven't, can you do a real quick summary of what 100
Absolutely.
Years of Solitude is about?
Yes. Again, in Latin America, it's been referred as the Latin American Bible. And is an interesting, I would say is an interesting and relevant way of looking at it, because it truly is the genealogy and the development of the story of a family, the Buendía family, beginning at a very small town in the middle of nowhere. There is this couple, José Arcadio and Úrsula, who have to leave their original town and create a new town with a community of people. And it's truly the development of that family throughout several generations, while going through a process of very rapid modernization, partially fostered or forced by the arrival of imperial forces that come from different places. Like there is at first there are the Gypsies, or what we call now the Romaine people, coming over and bringing objects that amazed the locals and that made them want to connect the town with the outside. Eventually, the Ursula, the founding mother, will go out and open the way into modernity, and then there comes the nation, the state, the parties, the po political parties, the war, the capital, the objects of modernity. And people get once and again so mesmerized and sort of like disconnected from what they used to be, and entering these waves after waves of rapid transformation that eventually becomes a sword for the degeneration both of the family and the town. So this is based in the story of a small town where Garcia Marquez was born, Aracataca, that was at the center of the transformation forced by the arrival of the banana industry in the Caribbean region of Colombia. So it's what they call the banana zone, La Zona Bananera, that saw an incredible flow of people from so many different places, including the international industries that came to create the bananera or the banana plantations, to rule the banana plantations, but also many people that went like it was the banana rush, it's like the gold rush or any of these other situations where people from many different places in Colombia and the Caribbean in the world arrive in that area to benefit from this banana rush. So the combination of human of different types of cultures and humanities and expectations and that came into place in that space in that little town actually gave place to the experience of this writer that lived there for the first 8 years of his life, listening to the stories of his grandfather about the wars that had just passed. Listening to the stories of the grandmother who had a big connection with some of the indigenous cultures in that area and had a more sort of like mythical or magical view of the world. And all of that nurtured this imagination that eventually leads to creating this story that encompasses a very real chapter of the Colombian history, but also encompasses the development of almost every little village of that humans have created just so rapidly that we, we get to see in this symbolic 100 years what is basically the history of humanity. So it's been thought of as a metaphor for Latin American history, in addition to Colombia, but also as the story of the global village, of the universal village, and of humanity as a whole, from our more primitive state into this sort of like modern rush that eventually in the novel takes to the destruction of the family and the town.
It's a really epic story. Yes, masterful storytelling. And we do want to talk more about that and the show itself. We have a message from Lorraine on Facebook saying, began watching 100 Years of Solitude last night. My daughter has read the author and is a fan. And I think there are a lot of others similar to Lorraine out there. We do need to take a quick break. Our topic today, Gabriel Garcia Marquez and 100 Years of Solitude. Our number is 800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn. We are learning about Colombian writer and Nobel Prize winner Gabriel Garcia Marquez, his landmark novel 100 Years of Solitude, and about the new TV series based on that book. We are also hearing soon about a new podcast about Garcia Marquez's work from Nadia Celis is working on. We are lucky to have two guests with us today who are experts in the author's life and work. Maria Mockler is Garcia Marquez's niece, and she lives here in Maine. And Nadia Celis is with Bowdoin College. She is an expert in Garcia Marquez's writing, and she teaches literature and Latin American, Caribbean, and Latinx studies. Join the conversations. What questions do you have about Garcia Marquez and any of his books? If you've watched the new TV adaptation of 100 Years of Solitude, what did you think of it? Email us at talk@mainepublic.org. You can comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Maria, I understand that your uncle himself did not feel like his novel could necessarily be adapted to film because it was meant to show what the written word could do. But most people who've watched the series, including me, do feel that it's faithful to the spirit of the book. What did you think?
Well, because you were not born in Colombia, so you think it's okay, that's great. And I have heard the same thing from friends. I think they did a very, very good. They have done a good job. But I wonder if he was still alive, like what his thought would have been. And I'm not sure I can, answer that question. His sons feel like, it was good. But of course, they were the ones who made the decision to approve, this. Of course, there's nothing they can do about that.
And I understand those are your cousins, right? And I heard that they approved it because they wanted to see something that wasn't the stereotype of Colombian culture of drugs and drug dealers and all crime. And so they thought this was at least a better depiction of the culture. Do you think that was a fair choice of theirs?
Yes, it was. And of course, they had the approval of their mom. She was okay with that as well. And so, they proceeded with, the approval. And so, but I think they are, I had the chance to speak with Rodrigo, the older son. And he was very happy with the results. So I guess that's what counts. My uncle is no longer here, so.
I guess it's really hard to do it justice. Nadia, I'm curious about you. You watched it too, and you've been immersed in his writing. So what was your take on this TV series?
Well, I guess if I look at it from the perspective of watchers from different parts of the world, you will hear different stories. I've been observing the process of the reception of the series in addition to actually watching the series. And it's been very interesting because we have, again, the same situation in which depending on who you are and where you position yourself, you will project in the novel or in the series a different kind of a story. So for those who are not in part of the culture, is a wonderful introduction to the scenarios, the landscapes, and the complexity of the culture of the region that gave place to the novel in the first place. So people are marveled at the sort of like the photography and the beautiful places that are shown in the story, which definitely in that sense they did a great job. I think that it also helps readers who had being a little bit intimidated by the pace of the story, that in the novel is extremely fast, and also by the continuity and the repetition of the same names after names. This is story of like Jose Arcadio is the father, and then Jose Arcadio the kid, and all of his kids are called Arcadios, which by the way is very real, like in my family is all Miguel's. But so that somehow the story helps you with that. The Netflix series helps you with that because it gives bodies to the characters that you cannot longer confuse. And also because the pace of the series, which in that sense is much better than if they had done a movie, pace of the series allows you to get to know a little bit more character by character. I think that those are significant contributions to the spread, to the further dissemination of a fantastic story. At the same time, I am a complete fan of the book itself, and there's no way that by watching the series, you are bypassing the incredible magic that the story produces. Like in that sense, even with all of the resources of the visual language, there is no way that you can match the kind of like incredible amount of meaning and the magic that you can assign to that meaning when is the imagination of millions of readers that is, activating that potential from the book and creating all of the images that we can as readers create based on the written word.
Yeah, I am with you, though, as far as it was very helpful to clarify the names and who's who, because it gets a little muddled when you're reading the book. But it was, I think that was one part that was helpful. We have an email from Chris. I am enjoying watching the series and will try once again to read the whole book. Gabriel Garcia Marquez is called one of the founders of a writing style called magical realism. Can you describe what it is and give an example of how it's used in 100 Years of Solitude? Let me first give Maria a shot at this as far as the idea of magical realism in his work. Is that something you've heard a lot and have a comment about?
Yes, well, magical realism is not that magical for us after all. Like growing up in the Caribbean coast, we see things that for people from other parts of the country, actually from other parts of the world, things that look like magic, but they're not really magic to us. I think that was one of the challenges for their production, because there were many things that they did a good job, like with the visual effects and all the stuff, but still, it didn't really like replicate what the book is trying to say. Like if you read the book and you are, you can imagine, like just, in your head, you're picturing certain things. But it was like really impossible to do it with the movie. I don't know if you're like, you understand what I mean. I don't know, Nadia. What do you think?
I'm curious too. I read in some notes about how the reason this magical realism, as it's been dubbed, came about is because Garcia Marquez was sort of just telling the story the way his grandmother would tell him stories, where it was just things, fantastical things would happen or realistic things would happen. She would just tell it all in the exact same way, like this is just part of life. And so he wanted to get that feeling, that part of the culture of how you tell stories, into his book.
Well, it is certainly what he's reproducing is definitely a way of looking at the world in the culture that he grew up with, that is very well represented by the way that the grandmother told the stories. So is realism mostly, as Maria said it, I agree 100%, it's more real than magical to us. What happens is that the way we perceive reality, and it continues to be the case, even in some of the rural areas in the Caribbean, and even in the middle of the cities, it's like myth, the understanding of the world through myth, through stories, continues to be a part of how we see reality. So rationality coexists with those elements that are considered non-rational. I mean, it happens to me constantly when I talk or my mom talks to my husband in Maine. It's just like He's like, where did you get that from? And he's like, well, that's the way that we see the world. You know, it's just like that. There's no evidence to that. It's like, I don't know if it's evidence. It might be anecdotal. It might be, who knows? I mean, there is like layers and layers of also like popular wisdom behind some of the, you know, what is might seem idiosyncratic or perhaps, you know, even superstitious, but it is a part of how we see the world. So what he did was to find a way to render that in writing. And that might look like a simple thing, but it was actually a very sophisticated style that he crafted in order to do that. Because in order to reproduce that sort of like orality, he had to use many different elements. So what he did was sort of like assembling together aspects that were coming from the myth, that were coming from legends, that were coming from reality and history. There is a lot of history. And there is a lot of historical research behind the novel. And he mixed that together with some aspects that are purely fictional inventions. But he did it in such a tone that everything is evening up. So when you read it, you cannot differentiate between what is, you know, a fable, or what it is an invention, or what it is historical. It all sounds as just the same thing. And that is, I believe, the most successful aspect of his own rendering of this mythical reality that many Latin American writers and writers from other parts of the world have been attempting to sort of like putting in writing, that in a way that also had a resonance universally, in a way that could be read by readers from many different parts of the world. And he's successful at that, by way of making that combination and creating this narrator, which tone makes it all possible. And so, and also there is, in this particular novel, in 100 Years of Solitude, there is something that really helps all of that. And is that you see the people from Macondo being amazed at things like ice, or like, you know, and the first time that they see cinema, like a theater, and they are like, they cry about this actor that dies in one movie and then shows up alive in the next one. And they are completely disappointed and so angry. It's just like, how can you be showing us this guy? We just cried for him last week. And so this amazement of the rural and local people at modernity, it mimics the way that we feel about things like the fact that they speak to ghosts, like that's completely normal. So we experience as well that sort of like estrangement from what we consider is real and certain by way of looking at the world in the way that the people from this town of Macondo feels it. So he's extremely successful at creating this sort of like aesthetic device that then it is taken by other writers and rendered more effectively in some incredible cases. I mean, very, you know, very well done in some cases, but then also used as a formula by others, you know, and then it becomes also like a formula that can be a little bit tiring. And that certainly the Latin American writers after García Márquez also have attempted to detach from, because it becomes some sort of like signature, and it also becomes a demand that all speak in that sort of language. And eventually they are like, I want to talk about the city. I want to talk in a different kind of, you know, tone. And editors are asking me that I put jungles and, you know, I'm flying women in the story. So
it becomes so cliche. Yeah.
Yes, it becomes cliche.
Well, let's go to Jean calling from Saco. Hi, Jean. What did you want to talk about?
Hi, everybody. Thanks so much. It's great to hear this conversation. I am a lifelong Colombia file. I'm very connected to the country, have very dear friends there. And I'm kind of on a one-woman mission to have the country Colombia spelled correctly in coffee shops around this country. And I've actually been in conversations with my friends in Bogota about the making of this series by Netflix, because Gabo was very clear that he didn't want this to be put on film. And you know, I know his children gave Netflix permission and put very serious restrictions on it, that it had to be in Spanish, that it had to be with Colombian actors. And my understanding is that it's being received quite well. So just so one other comment and then a question. My comment is about the books. And I actually started reading García Márquez with 100 Years of Solitude, and I found it really hard to get into, at least at that time in my life. So I would recommend to anybody who hasn't started to start with Love in the Time of Cholera. I just found that much more accessible, and it's so lush and so beautiful. And so that's just if there are any readers out there who haven't started. And my question is, and especially because we have his niece here, why did Gabo, like so many well-known Colombians, live his life outside of Colombia? So, you know, Fernando Botero, who recently died, lived in Italy. He's buried there in France and Mexico and New York. Shakira lives in Spain. And Gabo lived most of his life outside of Colombia, you know, mostly in Mexico, but in Havana and other places as well. And it's kind of a sadness for those of us who love Colombia that so many people leave it, but that especially that their most celebrated people do. Thanks
for your question, Jean. We're going to leave it as a little cliffhanger for Maria to help answer that question, just because we need to go to a break. So just hang in there. We're going to take a quick break. We're talking about Gabriel García Márquez. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn. The new TV series 100 Years of Solitude showcases the work of Gabriel García Márquez and Colombian culture and history. Our guests are very familiar with the author and his work and Colombia. Nadia Celis is a scholar of García Márquez's work, and she's a professor at Bowdoin College. She has a new podcast, which we will talk about soon, called 100 Years of Solitude Together. And Maria Mockler is García Márquez's niece who has lived in Maine for decades. Share your questions or comments. What do you want to know about Gabriel García Márquez, his work, or about Colombian culture? Email us at talk@mainepublic.org. You can also post on Facebook or Instagram, or call 1-800-399-3566. And thanks for hanging in there, Jean. You had the question about García Márquez living outside of Colombia. And Maria, do you have some explanation for that?
Yes, I can share some. I can answer that question. He loved Colombia. He never meant to leave his country, but at the time, that was not the most appropriate place, you know, to fulfill his career. He wanted to be a journalist. He ended up becoming a writer, but journalism was his passion. So he spent most of his life in Mexico City. That was the place or the country that opened the doors for him. He became friends with other famous writers like Carlos Fuentes, and somehow he just stayed there. But like Nadia said, he never fully left Colombia. There was a period of time that he had to leave just for political reasons, but we're not gonna go into that. That was a brief period, but I remember, like, you know, being a kid, and he used to go every single year. He used to spend Christmas and New Year's with all of us. So I guess, like I say, he never fully left Colombia.
Okay. It's a little bit like our own experience, I would say. Like, there are so many reasons why people leave their own home countries, you know. And some of them had to do with professional aspirations. Some of them have to do with wanting to see different parts of the world. And then you evolve with that process of being a migrant. And then eventually you find things in other places. But there is always this, there is definitely in the case of García Márquez, there is always a Colombia that he's coming back. Even in his books, there is almost like no book that he has written that he wasn't, or that he wrote that it wasn't about Colombia. And I think that that is also nurtured by this sort of like perspective that you can gain when you are from the outside, and that allows us to see through things that when you are inside, you just take for granted. So in that sense, he has also been probably the most, definitely the most important witness of our history and culture for both ourselves. And that's why he continues to be some sort of like mirror to us and for the world. So, you know, I think that it's not too far from the reasons that each of us Colombians in Maine had at some point to leave, and that there is a combination of many factors.
Thanks for sharing your experience and asking that question, Jean. Nadia, I just want to make sure before we run out of time, which is, time is flying by, you teach Bowdoin students about Garcia Marquez and about 100 Years of Solitude. And I understand you were eager to share some of those insights about him and his work through a new podcast, 100 Years of Solitude Together. So tell us a little bit about what that podcast is focused on.
It is also speaking to Jean's comment about the fact that it was difficult to take on the novel. So its most immediate trigger is that I saw the trailer from the Netflix series, and I had this gut reaction. It was just like, I was like in panic. I was just like, oh, what happened? Like, I've been for so many years just living with these characters in my imagination, giving them faces and bodies. And it's like, now all of a sudden, somebody else is going to put these images in my mind and in the reader's minds. And I just wanted to do something with the book before that. But it's definitely based, or was cooking for a long time through the process of teaching the novel at Bowdoin, and in which I have witnessed what might be the factors that intimidate us as readers when we first face the novel as well. So my interest was, on the one hand, to give an opportunity to people to read with us, now has become also an opportunity for people to watch with us. And so we can dig into the many layers of the novel and connect it to the original context on the one hand, also to the many themes that that are triggered by the reading of the novel and that continue to be many of them relevant for contemporary reality. And somehow render the novel, and this happened throughout the process, render the novel a little bit more like a lens to interpret humanity's development through modernity, and have conversations that are beyond the story of Macondo and the Buendía family. So we created the podcast, and I say we because we fully embody the idea of 100 Years of Solitude Together. It's a beautiful team of people that are working from Spain, Canada, Colombia, the United States together to put this tool out there for readers. And then we go through the stages of the novel. So we go through the periods that the historical periods that are embodied in the fiction, in the development of the narrative. And then with each of those sort of like stops of our journey, and in each of the stops in our itinerary, you get to engage with the characters on the one hand, my focus tends to be on the more intimate reading of the novel. You know, my main subject as a researcher, it has to do with gender, power, and intimacy, and with the confluence of love and violence. So we go into the characters' relationships as a means to reroute a little bit what it has been the most common pathways through Macondo. And then we talk about a little bit about everything. We talk about the history of Colombia. We talk about the reception of that history by world readers. We talk about magical realism and its legacy. We talk about memory and also forgetfulness and the price that we paid as humans when we forget history, because in the novel, history repeats again and again. And humans tend to create this, you know, the circumstances that somehow defeat them once and again, partially because they forget. And that's one of the big themes of the novel. So we try to remember the history behind each of those stops that the fiction allows us to visit. And that is, by 100. The way, in every platform out there, it's in like in Spotify, Amazon Music, and in Apple Podcasts. You can find it anywhere. It's called 100 Years of Solitude Together.
Great. That's fascinating. We have an email from Donna. Hola, my husband James and I lived in Arakataka for a year. He was working with the Peace Corps in economic development projects. Gabo is still very much alive there in spirit, culture, and everyday life, a joyful, creative, and generous community. And gracias from Donna. So there's that. And we have Sol on the line from Portland. Hi, Sol. What did you want to talk about?
Hi. This conversation has been so interesting, and it moves so fast. I am. I was in Nadia's first class when she taught the book at Bowdoin, and she managed to get us all to Colombia while we were reading the book, so that we could really see and embody the imagination and the characters and the space. And it was really transformative. It really, and now I still have, you know, this practice of reading, trying to read books that are set in the place I'm going to before I go to them. But all that is to say, it's interesting. So now I'm now a scholar of migration. That class was a long time ago.
Wow.
And while I have been thinking in my own writing about Gloria Anzaldúa and another book I read with Nadia called Dipte by a Korean immigrant woman, and as I was thinking about their kind of like urgency to create and speak and write into being worlds that make sense for them, I was really reminded of Gabriel Garcia Marquez's Nobel Prize acceptance speech, where he wins the Nobel Prize for Literature, and then he goes, and I remember this, like, he brings a Vallenato man to Sweden, and it's like a big party, and his speech is about, you know, the solitude and the pain of trying to fit a description of your world through the lenses of other people. So specifically, he was talking about trying to understand the solitude and pain and, like, lack of fit that happens when you try to understand Latin America from European lenses, and he kind of, you know, says that that's the intent of his own work. He was, you know, trying to write a world that made sense for his world from his world's perspective. And I was wondering what you guys thought about that endeavor, and specifically about that endeavor. Jean's comment about migration was also kind of adds to this. You know, we don't really talk about Garcia Marquez as a migrant, but in conversation with Gloria Anzaldúa and other immigrant writers who talk about multiple worlds and fits and trying to write your own world in a world that tries to compartmentalize you into multiple fragmented pieces. I don't know, you know, the question kind of devolved because I kept listening to your conversation and wanted to add more things into it. But it is about multiple world building and creating writing.
Okay, that's a whole bunch. So I'm going to see if Maria, maybe not Maria. I think Nadia is eager to comment on that question.
I hear some of the things that Sol are mentioning have to do a lot with the experience of translating your own culture, but as a writer, as a human being. And I think Maria and me, and as well as Jane, as many other Colombians in Maine, there are many of us, even if you don't see us, who not only have to be correcting people from saying Colombia instead of Colombia, as she mentioned. This is one of the many issues of translation. When we do not share the cultural references, we are all the time trying to fill in the voids for others in order to understand where we are coming from and how we make meaning of the world. And, you know, both Maria and I are also married to locals here in Maine, you know, so we have had the opportunity to do that constantly from our own space in our own home, but also our work spaces and in the relationship to other people. So it's like you're constantly having to not only explain, to tell or share your experience, but also to anticipate what might be lost in translation and offer meanings and offers new perspectives. And it's a very fascinating process that might lead to both isolation and challenging circumstances, but it can also be extremely enriching and allow us to see ourselves in many different ways. And the writers that Sol was mentioning do that. And García Márquez does that from a very like Colombia centered place, and then Anzaldúa and others do it like from the United States. And so I will say that I will take that as an invitation to tell Mainers to try to get to know people from that, immigrants in Maine. That there are many of us, and we have a lot of a lot to offer once you try to get to know us.
Yeah, we only have a few seconds left, but Maria, I wanted to hear your point of view on that as well, being Colombian in Maine, and what you would ask people to think of when they meet somebody from Colombia.
Yes, to ask about their culture and the real Colombia. Well, now it's not too bad right now, but when I first came here 27 years ago, whenever I met someone and I said, yeah, I'm from Colombia, immediately, they mentioned the things that I that are not so positive about Colombia, like, the drugs and all the stuff. And then I will say, yeah, but we have wonderful things like emeralds, orchids, coffee, and all that stuff.
Maria, that's wonderful. I'm sorry. We've got to wrap up. We're at the end of the show. That's Maria Mockler, niece of Gabriel García Márquez, and we had Nadia Salis, professor at Bowdoin College. I'm Cindy Hahn. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.